Today is Monday, December 6th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin set for talks for Ukraine.
Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov confirmed the two leaders will talk on Tuesday evening as tensions between America and Russia escalate over a Russian troop buildup on the Ukrainian border.
Plus, the U.N. denounces a four-year jail term on Myanmar's ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi.
The U.N. High Commissioner for Human Rights deeply deplores the conviction and sentencing of Aung San Suu Kyi on these offenses. I mean, the trial was a sham trial by a military-controlled court.
Also, deaths from COVID-19 rise in the U.S. and Omicron cases increase. Our top story today is in the U.S. President Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin are scheduled to speak via video call on Tuesday as tensions between the U.S. and Russia escalate over Ukraine. AP correspondent Naomi Shannon reports.
Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov confirms the two leaders will talk on Tuesday evening as tensions between America and Russia escalate over a Russian troop buildup on the Ukrainian border, seen as a sign of potential invasion. Russia is more adamant than ever that the U.S. doesn't admit Ukraine to the NATO military alliance. However, according to an anonymous Biden administration official, about 70,000 Russian troops are said to be at the Ukrainian border already, and an invasion is possible as soon as early next year. I'm Naomi Shannon.
Amid rising tensions, Belarus has protested what he said was a Ukrainian helicopter's intrusion into its airspace amid rising tensions between the two neighbors. Ukraine's border service, however, rejected the claim as false. The Belarusian Defense Ministry said Sunday that it summoned a Ukrainian military attaché to lodge a formal protest over a Ukrainian military helicopter reportedly flying 1 kilometer into Belarus on Saturday. The relations between Ukraine and Belarus have worsened at a time when tensions are high over Ukrainian and Western fears that Russia could invade Ukraine. Stricter travel rules began in the U.S. Monday amid a surge in COVID-19 deaths and in new Omicron variant cases. According to data from the Johns Hopkins University, the country is averaging more than 100,000 new cases each day. International travelers will be required to show a negative test within one day of departure, as against 3 days previously. Omicron COVID variant infections have been detected in at least 16 states. U.S. health officials say that while the Omicron variant of the coronavirus is rapidly spreading in the country, early indications suggest it may be less dangerous than Delta, which continues to drive a surge of hospitalizations. At least 38 countries have reported cases of the new Omicron variant of the coronavirus. U.S. President Joe Biden calls the variant a cause for concern, quote, not panic, unquote, as scientists work to determine whether it is more dangerous than other strains. Precautionary measures threaten the global recovery from the pandemic, with South Africa crying foul at travel restrictions imposed. VOA's Arash Rabasadi has more.
Christmas in quarantine. That might sum up the holiday season for would-be arrivals from southern African nations to London's Heathrow Airport. This after reports of room shortages in so-called quarantine hotels, as the United Kingdom now requires mandatory isolation upon arrival from southern Africa due to the Omicron variant of the coronavirus.
This turbulence of the booking and the flight changing and then arranging, finding out where you get your PCR tests and driving, you know, 10 miles to go and book it, it takes its toll. You know, you force people to do something, but allow them to do it.
The UK recently mandated a 14-day quarantine for travelers coming from what it considers red list or high-risk countries, like some in southern Africa. The U.S. has restricted travel from several southern African nations as well.
When those were put in, the only cases we knew about were in southern Africa. And really, those restrictions were put in to prevent new variants from coming to the United States and to protect the American people from new variants.
At a recent news conference in Ivory Coast, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa called travel bans unscientific and said they were a slap in the face to the African scientists who first detected the Omicron variant.
Whilst we respect the right of every country to take measures to protect their people, the sustained global cooperation we need to overcome the pandemic necessitates that we are led by science, and not by emotion, and not by political considerations.
As South Africa battles its fourth wave of COVID-19, largely driven by the Omicron variant, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky justified the agency's cautious approach.
We know it has many mutations, more mutations than prior variants, and many of those mutations have been associated with more transmissible variants, with evasion of some of our therapeutics, and potentially evasion of some of our immunity, and that's what we're watching really carefully.
As of Saturday, at least 16 U.S. states reported cases of the Omicron variant. As scientists continue research on Omicron, health officials brace for the spread of what they've called a highly mutated variant. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Nearly 2 years after the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 was first reported in China, a new variant discovered by scientists in South Africa has led to a fresh round of travel restrictions affecting millions around the world. VOA's Saqib al-Islam reports on the hurdles travelers are again facing and the controversy over the new restriction.
American Portia Steele was halfway to Kruger National Park outside Johannesburg when she heard about new U.S. travel restrictions targeting South Africa, where the Omicron variant of the coronavirus was first detected.
I was getting text messages from my friends and family about how they were restricting travel in the U.K., expecting maybe that they would restrict travel back to the U.S.
Steele shortened her first-ever trip to South Africa from 10 to only 2 days and booked four different flights back to United States before the restrictions took hold.
A lot of U.S. citizens tearful at the United counter, at the Delta counter, at the KLM counter, trying to figure out ways to get home.
Steele was required to have a vaccination card, a negative COVID test, and a negative rapid test at the airport to board a flight from Johannesburg. In the U.S., she was greeted by officials with the Center for Disease Control, given a self-testing kit, and then went into self-quarantine.
Traveling during the COVID era is knowing that things can change at any given moment and that people have to be malleable. Yeah, just caution to anybody, just be flexible because you never know what's going to happen if you're abroad.
But nearly 2 years into the pandemic, some are questioning if the sudden travel restrictions are effective.
I think the travel restrictions really are not helping us at all and are probably counterproductive.
Dr. Patrick Jackson is an infectious disease researcher at University of Virginia. He says it's almost certain that world will see more coronavirus variants in areas with low vaccination rates like South Africa. He's calling on countries to focus more on getting people vaccinated than on restricting travel.
One of the major failures of our pandemic policy so far has been not giving vaccines to the developing world and ensuring that the global population can get vaccinated.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is the country's leading infectious disease expert and president's chief medical advisor. After the first U.S. Omicron case was detected days ago, Fauci renewed calls for people to get vaccinated and defended the new White House travel restrictions.
No one feels, I certainly don't, that a travel ban is going to prevent people who are infected from coming to the United States. But we needed to buy some time to be able to prepare, understand what's going on, what is the nature of this infection, what is the nature of the transmissibility.
More than 30 countries have closed their borders and more have imposed stricter measures in response to Omicron. As researchers try to learn more about this latest variant, officials say it's imperative that more people around the world get vaccinated. Saqib al-Islam, VOA News, Washington.
On December 9th and 10th, U.S. President Joe Biden will host a virtual summit for democracy, which will bring together world leaders, civil society, and the private sector to counter authoritarianism, fight corruption, and promote respect for human rights. The summit comes amid democratic backsliding in many parts of the world and questions of the U.S.'s own democratic standing. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widaskuwara has this preview.
A military takeover in Myanmar, an attack on Brazil's election system by its own president, the assassination of the Haitian president, and several coups on the African continent. These are just some of the democratic declines the world has witnessed in 2021, the backdrop of an upcoming virtual gathering hosted by U.S. President Joe Biden on December 9th and 10th, called the Summit for Democracy. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
This is an opportunity for leaders to discuss the challenges and opportunities facing democratic governments and how democracies can deliver for their citizens based on the summit pillars of strengthening democracy, defending against authoritarianism, fighting corruption, and promoting respect for human rights.
The summit is part of Biden's campaign pledge to strengthen democracy around the world and will be attended by 110 countries. Christopher Walker is Vice President for Studies and Analysis at the National Endowment for Democracy.
The mobilization and the awareness raising and the focusing of the collective mind on these important democracy issues has already been a very salutary step taken by the administration.
Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin are not invited. While the summit is not explicitly about rallying the world against Russia or China, it is an opportunity for Biden to mobilize support against what he sees as their increasing authoritarian influence, said Stacey Goddard, the Mildred Lane Kemper Professor of Political Science at Wellesley College.
Bringing together democracies is in many ways a strategy that's designed to draw a line between the United States and its allies and Russia and China, and really to try to call on those states to choose a little bit. Not surprisingly, it makes them uncomfortable. States like South Korea, states like Germany, they really do depend on China for their economic prosperity.
Chinese Vice Foreign Minister Liu Yuchong said the summit will hurt global solidarity.
It divides countries into different levels of hierarchy, labels them as democratic or undemocratic, and points fingers at other countries' democratic systems.
During the summit, leaders will be encouraged to announce various commitments to strengthen democracy, but it's unclear whether these will turn into action. Still, the signaling of American democratic values is significant, says Stephen Feldstein, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
It shows a pretty significant break from the Trump administration, so that's important. And I think the kind of subsequent year of action that the Biden administration has announced will be really a really proof of concept.
Some have also questioned whether the U.S. has moral standing to host the summit, following the January 6th siege of the Capitol by supporters of Donald Trump seeking to overturn the former president's electoral defeat. The Biden administration says it is precisely the ability to acknowledge imperfections and confront them transparently, a strength unique to democracies, that the summit is meant to showcase. Patsy Wida-Kuswara, VOA News at the White House.
UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet on Monday denounced a four-year jury term handed down to Myanmar's ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi and called for her immediate release. A court sentenced Suu Kyi on charges of incitement and breaching coronavirus restrictions in a case that critics describe as, quote, fakical, unquote. Ravina Shamdasani is the spokeswoman for UN Office of High Commission for Human Rights. She said, quote, the trial was a sham trial by a military-controlled court without due regard for the fair trial obligations of Myanmar, unquote. Suu Kyi, 76, still faces charges of corruption and electoral fraud. Shamdasani also said that the army known as Takmadaw had detained more than 10,000 opponents since the coup.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights deeply deplores the conviction and sentencing of Aung San Suu Kyi on these offenses. I mean, the trial was a sham trial by a military-controlled court without due regard for the fair trial obligations of Myanmar. The military is attempting to use any means, including the judiciary, including the courts, to remove all political opposition. However, it's quite impressive that tonight in Myanmar, you are still seeing the banging of pots and pans by people in the country in opposition to the military. This kind of a sentence for Aung San Suu Kyi and the continued detention of political opponents, we believe it will only embolden the resistance against the illegitimate rule of the military. There was an incident in Yangon in one of the townships where security forces used a truck to ram into peaceful protesters, and then they opened fire, live ammunition, on unarmed protesters. Now, this is vicious, utterly reprehensible behavior. And this, coupled with the sentencing of Aung San Suu Kyi, sends a signal that the military is desperate to legitimize its rule. But in fact, it is accomplishing exactly the opposite. It is confirming that it is an illegitimate takeover of Myanmar. And it's not just Aung San Suu Kyi, in fact. There were two others who were sentenced to 90 years and 75 years of imprisonment on charges of corruption. There are some 10,000 other political detainees. And we've also had reports that at least 175 people, including many members of the political party, the National League for Democracy, have actually died in detention due to ill treatment and torture.
That's UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights spokeswoman, Ravina Shamdasani. The White House's Lakewood holiday cheer for this year's festive season, with First Lady Jill Biden's Christmas decor theme of, quote, gift from the heart, unquote. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the White House.
For her first Christmas as First Lady, Jill Biden chose gifts from the heart as her theme. And she's filled the White House with tributes to those who have inspired her in the past year. Frontline workers who soldiered through the pandemic, service members who gave their lives, and members of her family and those of previous presidents. First Lady Jill Biden.
For all of our differences, we are united by what really matters. Like points on a star, we come together at the heart. That is what I wanted to reflect in our White House this year. In each room, we tell a story of gifts from the heart. In the East Wing, we see the gift of service with shooting stars representing the frontline workers who brought light to our lives in the darkest days of this pandemic.
This year's decorations echo the theme of the last Christmas of previous First Lady Melania Trump. Trump's final Christmas decorations as First Lady paid tribute to first responders. As usual, the White House pastry team this year spent several weeks putting together a hefty gingerbread display. This year, it includes a school, police, fire, and gas stations, a hospital, a post office, a grocery store, and a warehouse. Executive pastry chef Susan Morrison.
It's all made of gingerbread, royal icing, chocolate, some gum paste, too.
So I promise I'm not going to do this. Could you eat all of this?
You could, technically, but it's meant for display. So the icing on the outside, when it's exposed to air, becomes very firm, like concrete.
Christmas trees have been a White House fixture for more than a century, but it was First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy who started decorating by theme. The First Lady's efforts haven't always been warmly received. Critics howled over former First Lady Melania Trump's 2018 decorations, which included red Christmas trees, with some calling them more frightening than festive. But the First Lady said that while the world may still be scary, the holidays shouldn't be.
No matter how dark the night, when we turn toward that light, we will never be lost. So thank you for helping us share those gifts from the heart. And happy holidays and Merry Christmas from our family to all of yours. We love you. Thank you.
As usual, the White House went big. More than 100 volunteers festooned 41 Christmas trees with 80,000 lights, 6,000 feet of ribbon, and more than 10,000 ornaments. Anita Powell, VOA News, at the White House.
This is the Voice of America. China is threatened to, quote, take firm countermeasures, unquote, if the U.S. proceeds with a diplomatic boycott of February's Beijing Winter Olympic Games. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Liyang on Monday accused U.S. politicians of grandstanding over the issue of not sending dignitaries to attend the games, which China hopes will showcase its economic development. U.S. President Joe Biden has said he's considering the boycott, under which American athletes will still compete, and an announcement is expected this week. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Monday to discuss defense and trade relations as India attempts to balance its ties with the United States. The two countries are expected to sign agreements in trade and defense. India and Russia have a long history of close ties, but in recent years, India has drawn closer to the United States, which it considers critical to countering China. India and China have had months-long military standoff along their disputed border in eastern Ladakh, where deadly clashes erupted last year. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Women activists in Kabul are calling for more change, claiming that the new Taliban decree banning forced marriages isn't enough to address the issues of women's rights. We have AP correspondent Naomi Shannon again to report.
Despite a new Taliban mandate which makes forced marriage illegal, women activists in the Afghan capital believe this is not enough to address the issues of women's rights and are insisting that they would continue fighting for their right to education, employment, and participation in political and social life. Since the Taliban takeover in mid-August, education at the secondary school level and above has been banned. The new decree is seen as a strategic move to encourage international recognition of their government and restore aid to the country. I'm Naomi Shannon.
The UN Refugee Agency has expressed outrage at the sharp rise in deadly attacks by armed groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ituri, and South Kivu provinces. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Dozens of people have been killed and scores wounded in the last month in the series of raids on sites harboring displaced people. The latest incident took place Sunday at Njala, a site for displaced people in the Drodro health zone in Ituri province. Local authorities say 10 women and 9 children were killed and 11 people wounded. They say men used guns, machetes, and knives during their killing spree. A spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency, Boris Cheshakov, says the attack was preceded by a series of grisly assaults against unarmed civilians who were displaced by previous atrocities.
And what we have seen just in the span of several weeks is an increase in the number and frequency of attacks. And these are brutal attacks. At the end of these attacks, we have the bodies of women, of children, of families, and whole communities are torn apart.
About 120 armed groups reportedly operate in eastern DRC. Media reports put the blame for the recent attacks on fighters from the Cooperative for the Development of the Congo, known as CODECO. The group is composed mainly of people from the Lendu farming community. Decades of intercommunal ethnic conflicts between Lendu agriculturalists and Hema pastoralists have resulted in tens of thousands of deaths. Cheshakov says the recent clashes have uprooted thousands of people living in locations that are housing displaced people. For example, he notes a deadly attack on November 21st in villages in Drodro and Che forced some 20,000 inhabitants to flee for safety to Ro, a site near a UN military base.
The site doubled in size from 21,000 to 40,500 people in just 48 hours. Forcing the newly arrived families to sleep in the open. The main needs are food, shelter, and healthcare, as well as psychosocial assistance.
The UNHCR is calling on all parties to stop the attacks on displaced communities and to treat those facilities as sanctuaries for people who are forced to flee their homes. The agency is appealing for greater financial support, adding it has received only 52% of the $205 million needed for its life-saving operation in the DRC. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Niger's Interior Ministry says the extremist gunmen have attacked a military camp near the West African country's border with Burkina Faso, killing at least 12 soldiers. In a statement Sunday night, the government said the rebels riding 100 motorcycles attacked the military camp on Foinion in the Gourel area. The ministry says soldiers fought back and inflicted enormous damage to the enemy, killing dozens of the attackers. The statement said the military is pursuing the rebels through land and air operations with reinforcements from the capital Niamey and other military bases. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mark B. Yabaro, and our managing editor, Kate Powell Dawson, I am Chinedu Afuenwash. Thank you so much for listening, and have a pleasant evening.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice